If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic. There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree. All right. Welcome back to Crimson Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I'm J Clone 200.
And this is the second attempt at recording part two of the Plasmoid Saga.
I'm having a deja vu moment.
We were 20-something minutes in, and the recording just disappeared.
It stopped recording, and then it erased itself.
It didn't even stop recording. It was like it never did it.
So,
yeah, don't look away from the button.
This is attempt number two.
All right, let me try. Yeah, I hate redoing episodes because it's never as good the second time.
Well, it's not as organic because our thoughts and feelings and reactions. So at least the beginning of this may seem a little...
scripted?
I guess, but like, yeah, they're not candid reactions, but they kind of are. I'll try to recant all the things.
Recount. I'll yell as much as I did the first time about how I'm right and how NASA's screwing me.
Well, yeah, NASA in a nutshell is ripping ideas. Not really, but
all right. So, real quick, Plasmoids Part One. It was in a long time. The first one we've had in a long time that had just a tremendous amount of support, comments. You guys really liked it,
and we forgot to post the link in the description. So we're gonna do our best to remember to post that. Thank you for who reminded us that it's not there.
It was several emails, and I sent it to those people. But real quick, if you want to find the article, just type in unidentified anomalous phenomena, literally, extraterrestrial life, anything like that, for the article for the Journal of Modern Physics. It should be like 91 pages. I'm going to shout out the authors and the universities again, just because these guys were, there's a lot of people that worked really, really hard on this.
Okay.
And it's a big collection of many people's works.
Mm. I think there's some gatekeepers in there too.
I'm not saying there's not. I mean, it's not hard for anybody to know we don't like the Smithsonian.
Right.
And they're on this list, but they're still, it doesn't mean the guy that was from the Smithsonian, the gal that was from the Smithsonian wasn't a good person. That, you know, just, you can like, you can hate the institution and not hate the scientist, which I've been very adamant on for a lot of this kind of stuff.
What, separate the art from the artist?
There you go. No, because you need jobs. Like, when you're a biologist or anything like that, like, you need a job.
I guess so.
Sean Gabriel Joseph, Olivia Palcon, Christopher MP, Richard Armstrong, Carl Gibson, and Rudolph Schochild. Schochild, I can never say that word, like, S-H, child.
Child.
Yeah. Also, the Astrobiology Research Center of California, the Bioscientito University de Bourgogne in Dijon, France.
That sounded very borderline. I don't know.
Not real?
Not real, yeah. Let's go with that.
Bioscience is the only Bioscience University of Bourgogne. I know it. I know the first part of it's Bioscience University.
The Bioscience University at the Beast of Jevudan.
At the Beast of Jevudan. The Department of Astronomy, University of Arizona. The Department of Vision Science, Aston University, which is in the UK. The Center of Astrophysics and Space Science, Scripps University of Oceanography, the University of California. And the Center of Astrophysics, Harvard, Smithsonian, Cambridge.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, are you watching that button?
Yeah, it's still red. We're still recording.
So this is part two. We're not even on to page two of a 91-page document. You guys got a lot of feedback, a lot of stuff from that.
I know, it's all from page one.
What you guys, a lot of you suggested this, is that do a part, do a couple other episodes, do a part, do a couple other episodes. So that's probably what we'll do. We'll sprinkle it in. Yeah, so I'll just read it again. Try to remember everything you said.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, that's going to be, that's the rough part of this show. We just do it live. We do it live, and when this happens, it doesn't feel the same, but we're going to give it our best.
Dr. Harvey Wichman, a professor of Claymont College, reported an encounter with a UFO, and they say in this documentary, in quotations, aka plasma, when working as a flight instructor on a Cessna 150 training plane. Accompanied by a student on the night of cross-country assignments, as they departed Lingenberg Field in San Diego on the night of May 28, 1968, he and his student were confronted by a UFO in the form of an extremely bright ball of light approaching on a straight collision course at a very high rate of speed that rapidly descended in speed, or sorry, deaccelerated in speed, and hovered, rapidly accelerating away from them, followed by another deceleration hovering. The apparent reconnection activity was repeated approximately 10 times more, which then the object failed to reappear.
So basically it accelerated right at him, stopped, and then bumped off, jumped to the side of him.
Extremely fast stopped, and it was circling them the whole time.
There you go. And it did that 10 plus times. Mm-hmm.
Wichman therefore did not see any object with a solid structure. The bright pulsating light was repeatedly circled and followed, targeting and nearly colliding with Wichman's plane several times, and then vanished. Wichman reported that he felt confused and extremely disoriented by the experience and struggled to control the plane.
Okay.
So we've talked about this in like the fungal episodes of fungal UFOs, that they have a byproduct of their existence, maybe a mind-altering effect to us. Which, like, because we're electrical beings,
right?
These things are producing a lot of electromagnetic disturbances.
Mm-hmm.
You could talk about your breaker box.
Oh, yeah. Like, from the show Ghost Hunters, I learned breaker boxes put out a lot of EMF, electromagnetic field, or whatever that is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're putting out a lot of energy. So when you take your reader, your meter, and you're looking for ghosts, and your EMF meter goes over by the breaker box, it spikes and goes crazy. Which they explain on that show, that's where they got a lot of activity and stuff too. And then that's when you mentioned earlier in our last pseudo recording that's why basements are creepy.
Mm.
It's because, but I just that phenomenon itself, having that high EMF reading, it does cause you, I guess, weird effects on your brain or on your body, yeah, and causing weird phenomena to maybe to seem like it appear, or does it actually appear? I mean, where do you draw that line? But it does. Either way, weird things are happening. And then, too, with these plasmoids, if they are just balls of energy and just balls of energy, I don't know what else you call it, but if they can change that frequency at which they, or what they're running on, whatever, you know, energy they're putting out, if they can kind of control it, you know, contract it or expand it, or have some weird visual effects too.
Oh, sure.
Whether it being cloud camouflage or I guess any other sort of form. I don't know.
Yeah. And then alluding to temporary, he also talked about electrical disturbances and nearly lost control of the plane several times. So this is very reminiscent of many, many stories from our first book on the living UFOs, mm-hmm. where they seem intelligent, as in like sentient. Yeah. Where they're, it's like it's investigating this plane. It didn't mm-hmm. do anything. It didn't hit him. The guy was very scared, obviously, because it was a strange phenomenon was happening, but it didn't do anything as far as we can tell on purpose. The electrical instruments and their consciousness, you know, struggling, may be byproducts that they don't understand, as in the creatures themselves.
Right.
May not understand that they are hurting us in a way, or, you know,
hurting our technology.
Hurting our technology or disorienting us.
Right.
Because we talked, like, in the book had several of it where it was like that. Also, I want to, this is about the time we did it last time we recorded. I keep looking at the button.
I know. I'm going to keep checking too. It's still red. It's still recording. Still on air.
Man, what did we say that was so anti, like, that was so right?
Would it have to do with the French?
No.
I know. I'm just being dumb.
Uran, a buddy of the show, sent us a clip from the Monsters Among Us podcast about the living UFO that a lady's seen. I believe when this comes out, it'll be 2 weeks ago, Monsters Among Us, Derek Hayes' podcast. Check it out. It's great. It's probably my first paranormal podcast I ever listened to, up there with like Blurry Photos and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Hysteria 51, which those, I don't think those last two exist anymore.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dang.
Anyways, the lady basically, her dog was outside barking late at night. I'll give you a quick version of it, but I think it's like at the 44-minute mark for anybody at home. So you can go listen to it. It's Robin's story on that episode of Monsters Among Us.
Okay.
Because I know on Spotify, you can go and see like the little broken up parts.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be like, I think it's Robin's story.
Oh, what's that called? Chapters, basically the titled chapters.
Yeah.
Which if you look at ours or the other show we produce, that, what's it called? DW Conspiracy Show.
Something like that.
The chapters are very funny.
Are they?
Very. So just a little tidbit, a little nugget there for people to look up on Spotify. It's pretty funny.
That's fun. But the dog's barking. And there is, she goes and checks it out. She's like, that dog don't bark at nothing.
Uh-huh.
And hovering above the dog in her backyard, and this is in Texas, I believe, hovering is a SUV-sized ball of light with a bunch of swirling lights inside. And she describes it as having a membrane on the outside. So she sees a bunch of energy being held in by a thin membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the whole encounter, she didn't feel any fear. Like it wasn't gonna hurt her.
Right.
Wasn't gonna hurt the dog. She said the dog's barking at her for 5 minutes. It had every opportunity. If it wanted to, you know, get the dog, it could have got the dog.
Do something to it, yeah.
And she felt that it was just as interested in them, like it wanted to see them, as she was to it.
Right.
So she's watching it, and she's watching it, a like Star Trek like tractor beam looking thing comes out of it and goes towards the dog. Doesn't touch the dog, didn't grab the dog, but it just goes towards the dog. And she realizes it's a tentacle. It just looks like it's full of light.
Now, is that, you know, a nefarious action or what?
No, it didn't do anything. It just, my thought is that maybe it's a sensory organ, or it's just a little more curious and maybe thought about touching it.
Okay.
And then after that, it just shot back up into the upper atmosphere.
And they never saw it again.
Mm-hmm. And she just said she had seen UFOs on her way to work. She left super early.
Yeah.
Way up in the upper atmosphere, balls of light dancing around and stuff like that. So she wonders if that's what she sees every once in a while in the desert.
It just was up close and personal.
Yeah, is it one just came and checked her out? And she was very adamant that it was alive. It was an animal.
Yeah,
it was. Whether it was intelligent like a human or a dolphin or lower, she didn't know.
Gotcha.
But she very much felt like it was a living being that was just curious that night.
Right.
And there's tons of animals that are just curious. I mean, from elephants and dolphins, you know, your higher apes, you know, your higher, what we quote unquote say is higher level things.
Higher on the totem pole.
Yeah, but there's tusk fish that are the only tool using fish that are said to be they're extremely curious animals. They watch humans and they're the only fish to ever been seen using a tool. They actually have a rock to crack open shelled animals.
Huh.
And they'll sharpen it and everything like that. And they'll learn and they'll watch people how they do and work and they'll start copying people. So there's animal intelligence, and we've talked about that a lot in this show, is a wide variety of different things that humans unfortunately tend to classify mammals as the highest level of intelligence because it's the closest to us.
Right.
We're mammals, you know, we're primates.
Relatable.
Least, yeah. So when you look at an orangutan or a chimpanzee or a bonobo, you can see yourself.
Right. It within them, yeah. Yeah,
so you can see behaviors like, oh, that's what he's doing. He's using the tool. He's making that, you know.
It's relatable.
When it's an octopus or a tusk fish or a grouper or, you know, a reptile even, you know, crocodile monitors are extremely intelligent animals. They're problem solvers. That's why they're so hard. Tree monitors and croc monitors in captivity are so hard to keep because they constantly need enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, and some of the big keepers say, it's like keeping big cats. That they are so active and, you know, so much what they want to find, they want to hunt, they want to explore. Like the reptile zoo has that, which that Brian had passed away, I think 2 years ago now from cancer, but you can still go visit the zoo in Michigan where they have several big monitors that are hyper intelligent, lovey dovey and sweethearts and stuff like that.
I think we just saw them this summer, right? Was that Toledo Zoo maybe? The big monitor lizards?
Yeah.
Or is that Columbus?
Well, we went to both this year. They both have Komodo dragons and those kind of things.
Okay.
Which Komodo dragons are very, very intelligent. They're the biggest monitor lizard that's alive.
Yeah.
But croc monitors and tree monitors. Croc monitors get their name from like hafting the raid crocodile nest.
Oh, okay.
They love eating crocodile eggs.
Risky.
So you got to be pretty smart to do that.
Right, yeah.
So I guess I'm saying all this because in the next part we'll talk about there's a lot with animal abilities that a lot of people, when we first kind of started talking about this idea, came out and was saying that that's so far-fetched.
Right. It's out of not possible. It's not on this earth.
Yeah. It's biologically infeasible.
Yeah. And then we got electric eels that can.
Well, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
I'll read this paragraph and then we'll talk about that kind of stuff. The term flying saucer has been attributed to Kenneth Arnold, who on June 24th of 1947, which isn't fun anymore because. What? Why is that date significant?
What, 1947? Mm-hmm. It's when the Roswell incident happened. I didn't guess that the first time, but now I know.
Yeah. What would you guess the first time? End of World War II, which was 45?
Yeah. It was close.
It's
all the same thing, really. It's all one big event, you know? World War I, World War II, Roswell. It all just, it's...
World War I, World War II, Roswell. It's all one thing.
It's one thing. It's all tied
together. Archduke Ferdinand caused the Roswell crash.
Yep. You got to follow the money.
I was going to do the toucan. Follow your nose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Toucan Sam.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Good old classic Fruit Loops.
The term flying saucer has been attributed to Kenneth Arnold, who on June 24th, 1947, observed a flash of light like a mirror reflecting the sun with a chain-like formation of 9 brightly lit scintillating lights that were flapping from the side to side like flying erratically, weaving, dipping, like the tail of a kite, and like stones being skipped over the water. And it flew like a saucer would if it was skipped across the water and flashed brightly, changing shape from a disc to a platter to a crescent, and finally having some shapes that look like a sky jellyfish.
Ah, bum, bum, bum.
With a pulsating lights in the middle of them.
Hmm.
So, 1947, the guy that coined the term flying saucer, and that we've talked about that a little bit, but everybody didn't know when he, like, this is the guy that, you know, it's attributed to. Flying Saucer wasn't talking about that, like the shape of a saucer, like the kid drawing a UFO.
Yeah.
It was talking about this, like it was skipping like a saucer. But they seen a ball of light that was shaped like a jellyfish with a tail of lights that look like the overpositors that we've talked about on some of the organic UFOs. Yeah. They have a big long tail hanging down behind them with the balls of light inside them like we've talked about. Jellyfish shape, 1947.
And that's a far cry from the... I guess what we call flying saucers nowadays, the modern, or at least like in 2000s, 90s,
2000s. Yeah, flying saucer, UFO, like...
It's just like a hard-bodied, you know, metal,
disc-shaped object. I do think there were some in this time.
Oh, for sure. But this, what he's seeing and describing, is not when I hear flying saucer, that's not what I think of, really.
I kind of wonder...
Which is pretty awesome.
If the Roswell crash, and we'll do an episode, maybe it'll be the season finale this season. If the Roswell crash was an organic UFO, because it killed a bunch of the sheep. You remember the guy that found it in his sheep, like the chunks of it? Which we'll do a full deep dive into it. It killed a bunch of sheep, made them sick. The ground was toxified.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about with these guys, when they fall from the upper atmosphere, their corpses seem to be extremely toxic.
Right. We're talking the like organic, sky jellyfish.
The sky jellyfish, yeah. Mostly, is what we believe.
Right. Not the plasmoids in particular.
Yeah. So with that, this is something that bothers me about this thing, is that I'm trying to remember exactly how we said it last time because it was so good. I looked at the button too.
Yeah, it's still recording.
Because this is the time. This is when the button died.
And we made that realization
20-some minutes in. But no. That what bothers me about this subject and what I really like about this show, like doing with all you guys, there's like 100,000 of you listeners now, and we appreciate every one of you. We love you guys dearly. But the paranormal and the science aren't that far apart. And so we have so many amazing, amazing animals. Mm-hmm. So when we first kind of started talking about this, us personally, the big pushback was that, well, that's scientifically impossible. Like life doesn't do that. And it's people that take for granted they're super-powered animals
mm-hmm.
that we have alive today. There's sperm whales can liquefy your brain
right.
from them talking. There's the white bellbird that can do the same, like blow your eardrums out from looking at you. I mean, they break camera lenses from a distance.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I'm talking hundreds of yards. They look and they scream and the camera lens will shatter.
Freaky Fauna Friday,
it out. There's that one YouTube video you can find where you can actually see the glass in the camera shaking vibrating from a white bellbird.
When it makes its crazy siren noise.
It's a bird the size of a football.
Yeah. It's wild.
And it could kill you. Like, and then electric eels. I mean, that's
the most common everyone knows of.
Yeah, it's because it's easiest because there's tons of electric fish.
Yeah.
That very clear.
And I don't know if people realize the actual danger, like electric eel, what they can actually output.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
Oh, they could kill you a lot of times over. They kill caiman.
Mm-hmm.
So we take for granted these animals. Like electric eels, 80% of their body mass is just for their organs.
The electric or
yeah, they're highly hyper specialized for producing electricity. Most of their organs and everything, the rest of their body's in that first like 10 inches
of their head. Yeah,
of their head.
That's everything,
and their anus is in their chin.
Yes, and the rest of it is all organ to produce electricity,
produce, store, and impulse. And so these creatures, these organic, these plasmoids, could be a carbon based life form. So that's the membrane, right?
Right.
And they're basically living reactors.
Adjusting the mic here. Sorry, okay. Guys.
They're basically living reactors where they're producing the plasma as either power sources or it's like an organelles inside of a body. And they have a thin membrane like people have described.
Mm.
And so they're carbon-based life form. And they could still even be specialized jellyfish. We're talking, you know, if you believe in conventional timescale, probably, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of years split off from the, you know, the ancient jellyfish ancestors. Or they could be a convergent evolution thing where it's just a membranous animal.
Hmm.
I
just thought of something. What if it's like a, what if like a, well, you know how microwaves, because radiation is just microwaves are just radiation, forms of radiation.
A form of radiation.
So what if like, you know, the waves coming in from the sun or space, quote unquote, you know, they're coming in. And what if these things are just like chaff, like, you know, little bits of metal, but contained. And then they can somehow harness those waves.
Sure.
And they react like a fork in your microwave.
So there was an astrobiologist that was designing life for other planets.
Uh-huh.
And there was gas giants. Yeah. They think they could find life in gas giants.
Oh, yeah.
And they literally drew jellyfish that harnessed the electrical static because the atmosphere is so churning.
Constantly,
They air so much.
Or supposedly, I'd say.
Yeah. And if you believe everything, which I do, the probe they crashed into, I think it was Jupiter.
Maybe.
But I think it was Jupiter, but they hit a rock eventually.
Yeah.
And it was not as dense as they thought it was. The atmosphere, it was very interesting. It was more like, because it's just, you know, gas giants, the red storm and all that.
Right, the red eye on Jupiter.
But, like you're saying, above the ozone layer, there's so much radiation.
Right, yeah.
And that was the longest theory why there couldn't be life up there is because it's deadly to life. And now we know that's just not true.
I mean, is there as much radiation as your microwave can output?
Different type of radiations.
Right, right, I know. But, I mean, there's still those types are all...
There are microwaves, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd probably be less than your microwave, but it's...
Or maybe less concentrated?
It would be less intense.
Yeah.
But longer-term exposure.
So, yeah, I wonder if they could just, like, kind of harness
solar radiation would be your biggest one.
Yeah, of course it would be, yeah.
Because, like, the solar winds, which are literally radioactive, like, ionized particle winds.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not truly a wind, you know, there's no wind in space per se,
but
it's basically this jettison of, you know, radioactive particles from the sun.
How did the flag flap on the moon when they planted it?
Yeah, well, that's a different show.
Oh, okay.
But these creatures could be powered on that. So I don't think you've said it this recording, but last recording you talked about the UK nuke. Where it was attracted to the nuke.
Yeah.
And it was rubbing the ground. And it was powering.
Well, at least they thought it was. I mean, whatever it was.
I think it was attracted to the nuke.
Whatever they knew was it was.
Because it was sitting right on top of where it was hidden in the ground.
Correct.
Turning on the launch and turning it off repeatedly.
You know, whether it was, yes, it was interacting with it on and off. And, you know, whether it's attracted to it naturally or, like I was speculating, I don't even remember if that was this episode or not, whether these plasmoids are just natural beings or natural occurring I don't want to say fauna quite yet, but just naturally occurring phenomena, or is it something that is naturally occurring that we somehow figured out how to harness and control, and you know it's in human guided or human controlled, you know, whether it's checking things out, is that it naturally doing it, or is it a human behind, you know, with the controls programming it to be that way or something, you know, like a drone, like a remote controlled drone or something.
See, and I think it would be more like the lines of, oh gosh,
sorry, I'm just coming out of that sickness still, but it's all broken up now.
As creatures that could be being harnessed by government bodies,
yeah.
Where it's like the bombs they strap to dolphins and so on,
right? Yeah. So where do you draw? You know, where do you draw the line? Is it being completely natural, or is it something guided by other forces, human forces? I don't know.
And so, ready for the next paragraph?
Yeah, we're still on page two, right?
Yeah, oh, we're not near leaving page two.
Gosh, one page at a time.
Arnold, which is Kenneth Arnold, was repeatedly emphasized that initial news accounts misquoted him, and he does not believe in little green men's stories.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's saying that the newspapers ran with the wrong part of his story.
Say it, yes, okay.
Or that these shape-changing crescents and disc and jellyfish-shaped objects and lights are spaceships from other worlds. And he's like, I never said that.
Yeah.
The news took that.
And ran with it.
But believes that they are living organisms.
Yeah.
This is 1947.
47. Ain't that wild?
And it was buried.
Buried behind the guise of little green men.
In hard ships.
Yeah.
The guy that seen it was like, yeah. He says, space and atmospheric organisms that have the natural ability to change their densities at will, he said. After some 14 years of extensive research, it is my conclusion, and this is Kenneth saying this, is my conclusion that the so-called unidentified flying objects that have been seen in the atmosphere are not spaceships from another planet at all, but are groups or masses of living organisms that are as much a part of our atmosphere and our localized space as life we find in our oceans. The first author of this report, based on the analysis of NASA's extensive Oculide space shuttle film, came to the identical conclusion, which is we talked about in the book, the jellyfish they took pictures of from NASA.
I was just going to say,
sorry, I'm
Yeah, if you want to learn more about
called,
this.
I was called so stupid. Like,
if you want to learn more about this, there's a book that came out 2 years ago
called Living UFOs, The Ocean Above Our Heads.
Yeah. Interesting. It's like all this information.
Please leave it a 5-star review.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. It'd help it grow. Help the show.
It's got all 5-star reviews except one.
And that it was probably some NASA scientist.
No, it was a listener, which upset me.
Oh, a listener didn't like it?
Mm-hmm.
A listener of the show?
Mm-hmm.
Gave you a 1-star review?
Because they said there was more information in the show, which is weird, that normally it's the vice versa. Which I said to everybody, it's an introduction to the topic. It's supposed to be digestible.
Correct.
You want me to start yelling about shadow biospheres?
That'll be in book 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, book 2 is already like 1,000 pages.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, so what do you think of that sentence that Arnold, the guy that's seen a UFO in 1947, right in the year of the Roswell crash, mm-hmm. was like, yeah, it was alive. It was a thing. And this is also in the book. We talked about the Mesa UFO sighting.
Yes. Which saw the, it came down, someone, what, an damn, injured one, it yeah, looked appeared to be injured. Hard bodied, we classified it as the clamshell type of metallic UFOs or living beings. It came down, crashed on top of the Mesa, and it looked like it had a chunk out of it. It was bleeding.
Gold.
Like gold liquid.
Strings.
And there you go, yeah.
And he's like, it kind of acted like liquid, but it wasn't.
Right. Like a
quicksilver is almost what I imagine.
What do they call it? Laminar flow?
Yeah.
Laminar flow or something like that. But then another bigger one came down and scooped it up. We think either it was...
Well, he thought it was its mom coming to get it.
Yeah, we think more or less it was self-predation.
Yeah, it was eating it. Like, that was... Oh, there's where it ran off to.
Yeah, there's the thing I just took a bite out of landed. But that's what he was referring to as that... A body plan of organic being, a living UFO, a metallic-looking flying disc, but being an actual living creature, not a hard-bodied technological ship that's powered off little green aliens' minds.
Which, is, it's just fascinating that Kenneth Arnold, the guy that was credited for coining the term flying saucer,
mm-hmm.
said that they were a living thing.
And, like, yeah. And
you don't find that anywhere.
No, I was going to say that, like I said earlier, it's a far cry from what we describe as, or what you think of as a UFO, you know, nowadays, modernly, because we've transformed it into the modern idea of it being aliens in a metal ship that can just transverse the galaxy.
I'm sure there were some metal ships and stuff like that.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I meant overall, though, that's what we think of. That's what comes to mind. But not saying that those never were a thing, but here we are at the root of it, you know, at some sort of root of it, you know, or at least it's publicized or talked about. It's not what he was describing at all. No metal ship at all is what he's describing. Yeah. So it's kind of wild.
It's like a ball of living light.
Thing. Yeah, that's the mainstream thing now is a metal, hard-bodied ship. No, no, we say. And if you read the book or, you know, you've been on this journey with us for, gosh, 4 years now. We've been recording ourselves. You'd already be a privy or ahead of the curve on this one. Or ahead of the curve. 5 years? Dang. Coming up on.
Started in 21.
Right. So we just crossed the 4-year plateau. Mm-hmm. So we're coming up on 5 years in 2026. Wow. Wow. But yeah, I don't know. It's pretty wild.
All right. We'll play an ad and we'll come back with more. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Here we go.
I'm hungry. Welcome back to Cooking with Jay Clone 77, and we're back again on a new episode with my guest chef, the Defiance Dogman.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, okay, Defiance Dogman. Today, you're preparing a special dish. What do you got for us today?
Lamb chops.
Ah, some roasted lamb chops. Oh, now, you said today you brought a secret ingredient. What was that you brought with us today? Oh, spicy Bigfoot breath, raw garlic dust from Flavors of the Forest?
Yeah, best thing.
Ah, let me sprinkle a little bit on my lamb chop here that you prepared. Oh, my goodness. This flavor profile went from a 10 to an 11.
That means you go...
Couldn't have said it better myself, Mr. Dogman. And you can find this. You can get your own bottles of Flavors of the Forest raw, spicy garlic dust, raw garlic dust, spicy garlic dust, Bigfoot breath. It's all delicious and packed full of garlic, delicious flavor that you can't get anywhere else. You can get it at flavorsforest.com/corn.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Man, definitely. Definitely didn't ad-lib that.
At all.
That's it. That was like our first one. One of them.
It was one of them.
Good old Bigfoot breath.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
Let's continue.
I just feel validated.
From the dog man eating Bigfoot breath?
Exactly. So, next paragraph. These observations, fact-based hypotheses, and conclusions that may, but not all, UAPs are actually cellular electromagnetic plasma.
Plasma.
Are supported by an analysis by the British Ministry of Defense, which conducted a multidisciplinary analysis of UFO-UAP phenomena based on information collected over 30 years and are comprised of several types of rarely encountered natural events within the atmosphere and ionosphere. And the events are almost certainly attributed to physical, electrical, and magnetic phenomena in the atmosphere, mesosphere, and ionosphere. I wonder if anybody ever talked about the mesosphere. The fact that these objects reportedly have a maneuver and acceleration attributes to the non-inertial vehicle. Sorry, reinforces the hypothesis that they are buoyant, changed bodies. Ooh. So that last line is basically saying that these things don't seem to operate with inertia.
Okay.
So anybody didn't know, like, inertia would be the force on you. Like, if you're running really fast, you can't just stop.
Right. An object in motion stays in motion. Yeah. Yes.
So that's my best way to explain it. Like, you have to decelerate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no animal can just stop. Like, even you got to glide or, like, you can't, like, I guess you running would be the best option.
The only person close, Jerry Rice, maybe.
I don't know who that is.
Oh. Football player.
Mm. But yeah, this is by the British Ministry of Defense.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, that's a pretty higher up authority saying that stuff.
Yeah, they seem to be just weird jellyfish in the upper atmosphere.
Yeah, we'll never talk about this again. We'll call it aliens. See how the deception works in the world? We'll just call it aliens. It's not aliens, people.
It's big jellyfish.
It's big jellyfish and nefarious governments.
Cellular electromagnetic plasma.
Wow.
Which means, so they have cells. Is what they're claiming. So that would be more like the membrane over plasma or, you know, harnessing plasma.
Yeah.
So like a jellyfish, like a dome or a bubble.
The microwave shell containing the fork in the microwave.
That's why they don't like forks.
They don't at all. Or grapes cut in half. They really hate them.
Ah, just start. So the next line is, we hypothesize based on factual evidence in that some plasmoids may be sentient and conscious of their surroundings and engaging in purposeful interactions, i.e. they may represent the fourth domain of life.
Interesting.
As documented in NASA film footage compiled from the first author and as documented via freeze frame reproductions in this report, some plasmoids engage in extremely complex behaviors and what could be constructed as curiosity and evidence of intelligence. Moreover, astronauts have reported that glowing plasma-like entities have appeared outside space shuttle windows. So when I talked about that, everybody said that's fake. That's fake. That's fake.
Yeah.
No NASA astronauts ever said they seen jellyfish outside the windows.
They did.
They did.
Yep.
NASA's right here saying it.
They did. I remember seeing old videos and stuff where they would talk about it. Like some
you can see that one that they're talking about in this clip. They have it here in one of the links.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch it. It looks like almost like a squid going right at the shuttle.
Mm-hmm. You can see too. There was International Space Station videos where it was like the. Not so much the big giant amoeba manta ray shaped things. They seen them outside of like, I guess in space, quote unquote, but
so,
especially with the infrared cameras.
Yeah. It's not, the space shuttle is not in space.
Correct. It's in the upper atmosphere.
Low Earth orbit.
Yep. So it's still within our atmosphere.
Yeah. But it's would be the ionosphere, which is that last layer where it's.
So at least supposedly.
If it's. Huh?
It may not even be that high.
I think it is, but that didn't matter.
Right, yeah. Still within the atmosphere.
Yeah. So there's no, like, gas. Like, you can't breathe outside. It's, you know, you'd still be at the mercy of radiation.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the gases that are there are the lightest of gas. Like, it's nothing good for us.
Mm-hmm.
It still would be a toxic environment for most forms of terrestrial life.
Mm-hmm.
But if these are not carbon-based life forms and are more energy-based, then all those don't matter.
All those factors are thrown out the window.
Yeah. And even if they are carbon-based life form, there are plenty of carbon-based life forms that thrive in those environments. We have extremophiles all over this planet. I mean, ironclad snails and tardigrades.
Yeti crabs,
you know, all this stuff that animals, life appalls a vacuum.
Abhors, right?
I think it's appalls, but okay. I may be wrong. Abhors the vacuum. There you go. I'll do it for you.
I think you used to say it a lot. I'm pretty sure you did.
Appalls?
Abhors. Life abhors a vacuum.
Appalls a vacuum.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. We're splitting hairs. Semantics.
In
the weeds.
Where they'll fill every void. I mean, there are animals that live in volcanoes. Oh, yeah. There's whole birds that have to nest in volcanoes.
I mean, Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Life finds a way. I can't do one. It just...
Life finds a way.
And then basically saying that they seem to have buoyantly charged bodies for inertialess vehicles, with how fast they accelerate, decelerate, stop on a dime, that they seem to be, and they're using buoyant in this terminology as almost broken off of gravity.
Right, yes.
That they are negatively charged or evenly charged with that force.
Mm-hmm. Just like a fish in the water where they're floating in the water.
Perfectly.
They're not sinking or they're not at the top. They're just buoyant.
So this would be, this type of buoyancy is more charged with inertia, which would be directly related to gravity.
Mm-hmm.
That they are somehow manufacturing themselves outside or evenly with that force.
Which we know with, electromagnets. You can make things float.
Float, yes. But this would also get rid of wind resistance.
Oh, yeah, all of it.
So that's the big thing with, like, the vacuum tube trains.
Yeah.
Is that if they depressurize... Because they have to get the vacuum
correct
for them to move
and move quickly the way in which they move.
Yes, they'll wreck.
Yeah,
and that's why they're not widely spread and anything like that. Is because to manage that many miles of tunnels,
pressurized tunnels, mm-hmm.
and then a cat like there's no light wreck.
Right. No, it's catastrophic.
It's catastrophic every time it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it scares everybody.
I kind of though I picture it like in the way. A couple ways. Even we'll just stick with trains, like the magnetic trains or whatever, where the rail lines are actually electromagnetic, so the train floats. So those are pretty sweet. And then two, those electro, those little toys you like put on your desk. Like,
yeah, I've had them. Yeah.
Where the, well, I remember you can Star spin the Wars. Bottle. Remember Star Wars back in the day? It was like Burger King or McDonald's. They had the little toys for, it was episode one or two when it came out. And that silver ship that Queen Amidala flew in, you remember?
Okay.
They had a little toy where you'd sit on the platform and you had to position it just right, but it would float. It would, you know, like just, it was in the perfect balance point for her. Whatever magnets they had in there, but it would float and it would hover right there, but it was defying the strongest force in the universe, gravity. It was defying it. Somehow Lil McDonald's toy figured that out, but it's
not
wild.
Fully defying it, but yeah.
I mean, it was, gravity's here. It holds us all together, but it was floating.
But why couldn't it just float all the way up then?
Well, it was because it was defying.
Because it was being pulled down by gravity still.
In a sense, the platform.
In a sense.
In a platform.
No, it was.
Yes, I know. The platform was, but the ship itself was not. Think about it. The strongest force on Earth, I don't know. I'm just.
It could only break it for about 4 inches.
It still broke it.
And then it couldn't go up any higher.
It still broke it.
Anyways, it just, this is always the funniest fight.
I don't know. You can break it, is what I'm saying, even though it's that strong.
You know, you can bend it.
Yeah, you shouldn't be able to. So the strongest, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, can you bend his arm?
Yes.
No.
Now I could.
Maybe now, but not at his peak when he was the strongest force on Earth.
The strongest force. So, once again, moreover, astronauts have reported the glowing plasma-like entities. Can you imagine an astronaut being like, hey, you know, you're on the edge of the Earth, on the edge of the void.
Okay, looking over.
And you look over and there's a glowing point. Green... a jellyfish full of lightning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, and we talked about it a lot with the Russian one. Yeah. They were seeing it. He called them the angels, but they look like giant, like halfway between stingrays and squid. But they glowing green and they travel, like they would ride with the sun.
Right. Yeah.
They were trying to avoid, you know, being cooked essentially with the sun, which that may be their migration pattern every day, you know, staying out ahead of the sunline.
Yeah.
Where they're so high up, you cannot see them with the naked eye. Or if you do, it's the flashes of light.
Oh, it'd be just like those Yeti crab in that little circle around the thermal vents. Get too close, they'll burn. Too far away, they'll freeze. Like, so they ride that line.
I was talking about the light thing, and I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh,
the
sorry.
Yeti crabs.
Sorry. I meant the sky
squids.
They
have no idea what you're talking about, because that comes out after this.
Oh, you guys about to foreshadowing. Foreshadowing.
Anybody can guess what this week's Freaky Fauna is?
And monkeys.
Monkeys.
That's the Freaky Fauna Friday. It's monkeys.
Oh, I was like,
I'm throwing them off.
So yeah, outside the shuttle, often traveling from window to window as if looking in, doing so, which was upsetting the crew. The glowing plasma has, okay, before I continue on. So NASA has this and they classified it there forever. That there were plasma-like entities that were peeking in the International Space Station windows.
Hmm. Interesting.
This happened!
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Hopefully this is still entertaining for you guys. I just feel so validated. Because when that book came out, you know how many people were like, this is the dumbest thing? Because the UFO community will eat itself alive.
Oh, of course they will. Because everyone has to be right.
Mm-hmm. And once again, I'm very adamant that it's like 5 to 10% of UFO sightings is the organic stuff.
We've said that since the very beginning.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of government stuff and drones and maybe even the Nephilim or the Hollow Earth people. I don't know.
It all overlaps.
I think there's plenty of UFO stuff that is metal or interdimensional or, you know, whatever.
Technological.
Yeah.
Ooh, technologia.
But yeah.
Love those videos.
You imagine you're in the International Space Station floating around and there's just this big green glowing eye of like a giant squid looking in.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
It's probably just a crew member there on set trying to freak out the guys. They think they're in space.
This is probably why we stopped going to space. Like, really? It's because they get bigger the further out you go?
Because you're not supposed to be out. You can't actually get out there. These are the guardians.
There you go. It's a water.
They're the guardians from the barrier, from you leaving, because you're not supposed to leave.
It's the Earth's immune system.
We've never left. What?
It's the Earth's immune system.
It is. It's like the out of bounds, like when you're playing a video game, like Subnautica, for example.
Oh, yeah, Leviathans start coming.
Yeah, you go too far out. Ghost Leviathans show up and eat you because you're not supposed to be out there. It's just how the program works.
So, yeah. Glowing plasma has been seen entering homes, businesses, and even through cockpit windows. in one instance and is slowly moving about the interior of the plane as if reconnaissance.
Okay. Reconnaissance. You got it.
Yeah. Reconnaissing, though. The the verb of it.
Okay. It's in a reconnaissance mission.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like looking around like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Like, it's inside a plane. So this would go more towards them being purely energy-based, mm-hmm. or more energy-based, where because they're going through windows and glass and that kind of stuff.
Were they actually going through it?
Yeah. So they were seen, when it came through the cockpit, it came through a plane's front glass window.
Oh, wow.
Like slithered through the glass and was then traveling around, looking around. And then when we talk about the ones in the houses and stuff like that, where the one that killed a guy, on whether it was an accident or not, it slithered through the glass. It crawled around the house. There was like 8 or 9 people had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It hit a mirror and then exploded, killing the guy closest to it.
That's so weird.
So, because mirrors aren't translucent, you know? So maybe there's something with it where, because mirrors aren't like the same type of glass.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the creature or the thing didn't realize it couldn't go through it.
Well, it depends on the mirror too.
Yeah.
Because some mirrors are made like with that.
Early 19.
Oh, then it probably is the old mirrors that, you know, they made with that metal, yeah. Right? They would melt. So
where maybe it thought it was glass that it could go through, and it hit an object that hurt it.
Yeah.
And it just...
Well, maybe it touched, maybe it reflected its... here we go. It's, you know, like mirrors are actually portals to other dimensions, right? And it touched itself, and it had a time continuum, you know, malfunction, and it exploded. That's what happened. You're not supposed to. That's why you can't go back in the past and talk to yourself in time travel. You'll explode.
Moreover, plasma UAPs encountered in the troposphere.
Okay.
Have been accused of surveillance, mimicry, toying with us, harassing aircraft, and so on.
Hmm.
When have you ever heard any of those terms? Mimicry and toying with us.
In this book I read, it's called...
I'll keep bringing up the book. I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm done with it.
It needs to be brought up.
As reported by the Navy commander, David Favier, the UAP he and his fellow pilots encountered behaved with conscious intentions. He says this is a quote from a Navy commander.
Okay.
It was aware we were there. And this comes from a story where they were encountering ball lightning, essentially.
Okay.
And he's like, it's alive, whatever, it, you know. And what if this is some of the old stories of ghosts and stuff like that, where it's like just these, you know, energy or shadows or, you know, where it's, if you go back 100, 200, 300 years ago, before electricity, before you can point at something and be right. Like, it was like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you describe these things?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Maybe that's why the Amish don't use electricity.
Sure.
And back in their lore, early in the days, they seen this and they're like, this is a demon. We don't do this. And then someone figured out, hey, we can control it and put it in on these handheld objects. Look at this, guys. And they're like, that's demonry. Just made that up.
Furthermore, plasmoids appear to be extremely aware of each other as well, as evidenced by numerous examples of turning, following, targeting, colliding, and merging. To speculate, although not all plasmoids have behaved the same, when considered as a collective, their behaviors and their conglomerate structures could be linked to eukaryotic algaes. For example, Erdenoa elongius, which is a scientific name of an algae. For example, although this species of algae may look like a single organism, it is actually a conglomerate consisting of up to 64 cells loosely grouped together.
So like a siphonophore.
Like a siphonophore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, thousands and thousands of individual animals, which they're multicellular creatures,
mm-hmm.
holding hands essentially to build bodies. The Portuguese man of war is the best example, where it looks like a jellyfish and it's thousands of animals. Likewise, as documented in this report, we with what look like single cloud-like plasmoids in some cases, actually consist of dozens of individual plasmas grouped together, forming plasma conglomerates that engage in coordinated actions to produce what appears to be purposeful behaviors.
I imagine...
like the cloud we talked about in our live show.
Oh, yeah.
The video of the cloud. I'm like, look, it's like a siphonophore. I said that. or look at all the little things inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see thousands of little guys, and it's forming a big cloud-like body.
Right, yeah. I was thinking, too, like those toys. We just talked about it, actually. Those little magnetic ball toys that you can connect
on. Magnetics.
Magnetics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I, yeah, there's like a few.
Don't buy them for your kids.
No, they're bad.
They killed a lot of kids.
Don't eat them. Or they'll eat them, I mean, and it's bad. Don't eat magnets. It's bad. But it reminds me of that, like how they all, you know, kind of connect together and you can form all these crazy shapes and whatnot. Whatever kind of structures you really want based off, but because it's all electromagnetic, what's it called when it it's groups its own pattern. It's just the field. It's, you're visually seeing the field with a magnetic like ball shapes, which is nice. So you can create all these intricate patterns. So if these things are electromagnetic or individual balls of plasma, which are electromagnetic in my head,
they produce that.
So they can, I would say, imagine they can connect and create all sorts of crazy kinds of shapes, which if our government has the ability and the technology to create these things or make them plasmoids, then that means they could control them and they could control all crazy shapes and whatnot they could make.
See, I don't think they have the power to create these.
Oh, you're doubting the power of the U.S. military.
Yeah.
That's 80 years advanced in technology than
I think they may be able to control them or lure them. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of evidence for that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think these things are naturally curious.
Yeah.
So I think they could be trapped.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's some talk here in a minute about DNA and stuff with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that reproducing them would be incredibly complex. I think it'd be much easier to trap and use them or even lure them. What? I think you can do stuff to cause them, like the Malaysian flight. You can do stuff to cause them to attack something.
Yeah.
Like you can essentially throw the beehive at somebody and they'll take care of it. You know, then there's no evidence.
Right.
What, they're mad. Whatever you have to do, but whatever irritates them.
What if we figured out how to make the beehive? You know what I mean?
I just don't think so.
I do.
Plasmoids can generate additional plasmoids, i.e. they reproduce and generate plasma that also engages in complex behaviors, as in documented reports by the NASA video. And then for everybody, like I said, look at this thing because they're all hyperlinked for the videos and the figures and everything like that. So for example, as depicted in figure 16A and 16B, plasma 1 travels towards a thunderstorm and intersected with plasma 2 as a hypervelocity plasma speed. So we don't even know how fast they're going.
Right.
Then another plasma number 3, materializes or suddenly self-illuminates, then changes shape as it follows plasma 1, then intersects with the same plasma 2, then passes close to plasma 1, continues upwards, and finally hovering above the thunderstorm. And then plasma 1 replicates, produces, or secretes a new additional plasmoid number 4 that travels towards and intersects with plasma 3, which heads back towards the 2 and merges with 1 again.
Hmm. Okay.
So whether this is reproduction, secretion, like this, if they're a whole new form of life.
Or, yeah.
Reproduction would be a whole, it's alien. It's alien, even though that they are like native to Earth, they can still be very alien. If they're a whole shadow biosphere.
Oh, for sure.
So shadow biosphere, for anybody who doesn't know, the tree of life is the complete biosphere.
Mm.
So eukaryotic, prokaryotic, you know, animal, plant, fungus, all those things. The only thing that's not included in that is viruses, which I believe are already a shadow biosphere.
Mm.
Because they need, like, because they don't self-replicate.
Right.
So they don't get classified as life, but they move and interact with life. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So I think these guys could be a whole separate tree of life. So a shadow biosphere is basically another tree of life in the shadow of ours.
Right, exactly.
And they could be extremely common. And it's just that, well, for example, for these plasmoids, that sometimes they just move so fast you can't pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
That they're invisible during the day, or they're very hard to see during the day, or they're so high up in the upper atmosphere that most of the time they're 50 miles away from the nearest person.
So you're never going to see it.
Yeah. It's like talking about deep sea organisms
mm-hmm.
that you, how many people have interacted with a snailfish, you know, the bottom of the sea, these little tiny creatures. I could probably count them on one hand.
Right.
The number of people that
even anglerfish.
Yeah.
Like we know they're there.
Deep sea anglers. Yeah.
Yeah. Deep sea. We know they're there, but we're never going to like get hands on with them. Hardly ever.
Or giant squids. I mean, it took us, you know, 60 years after a body washed up to find, you know, to see a living one.
Shoot. I think it was just 2005 we just discovered the Yeti crab.
We're going to start recording Freaky Fauna last.
I'm sorry. They're so good, though. It's Freaky Fauna Friday. If you guys don't
listen to that, they're going to get all the facts about Yeti crab. They're not going to even have to listen.
Sorry. Sorry about it. You're right. Freaky Fauna Friday. Check it out. It's in the links below in the description. Right below the link of the article. At least I know the Freaky Fauna one is definitely there.
All right. I think this will... Maybe this will be our last paragraph. Maybe we'll do one more after this. We'll see.
Okay.
It isn't... We're almost on, off of page two.
All right. Yeah, let's just finish page two.
I don't think you want to do that, but we'll see.
Okay.
It is important... Okay. So... This is the next paragraph. It's important to avoid anthropomorphizing, which is putting like human characteristics onto animals or other things' life. What may be purely electromagnetic push and pull attraction repulsion events, which exposed to highly changed and charged environments and surrounded by plasma of opposite, similar, or changing electrical currents. So they're saying that, you know, you got to be, they're trying to be non-biased. Because just because it looks like they are conscious and moving and stuff.
Doesn't mean they are.
Yeah. Right. That they may just be charged and reacting.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like you're butchering chickens. You cut the head off. Now they're running around the yard. They're not alive. Their body's just reacting, right?
No.
That's not what you're saying? They're just doing their thing, even though there's no consciousness there. They're moving and they're running around. They look conscious, but they ain't got no head. What?
Okay. Just odd.
It's a good, you already know, it's a good comparison.
However, around the Alphon, these plasma contain cellular membranes, where plasma with a nucleus have been repeatedly observed, which contains glowing spheres within, and there's about 24 figures you can look at to see plasmas that appear to have a membrane with a nucleus, like a giant cell.
Like a big pirate eye.
Like a big pirate eye. To speculate, or a giant amoeba.
Ooh.
To speculate, these internal spheres could be the constituent of the neural network or circulatory or double standard DNA. Plasmids that have the ability to replicate or self-clone. Based on laboratory experiments, a number of scientists have proposed that these dusty plasma may be the cilia, RNA, and DNA helix structures that may represent non-biological forms of life or pre-life.
Pre-life?
That, like, yeah, it's just a fancy term for, like, the primordial ooze for carbon-based life that in the theory of evolution. So what they're saying is dusty plasma in some labs where they've caught these things.
Yeah.
It appears that they have a nucleus. It appears that they have organelles if they're a big cell.
Okay.
And that we think that we can see where the DNA is stored, the genetic material is stored.
Okay.
For self-replication.
So it's very similar to, I guess, what we're used to dealing
with. Giant amoebas.
Right, yeah.
Or jellyfish. Or any of that, you know, these very big but simple things.
Right, yes.
So yeah, they have one in a lab where they can point at. And then they die really quickly, or they dematerialize very quickly. Because I think once you put them in a jar, they don't last long.
I'd imagine not. It probably,
like a jellyfish.
Well, that, or even just like the microwave, where you put stuff in the microwave, metal in it. You see it charge up, you see those things last, but they're there and then they're gone. You know, it's just fleeting. So where does it go?
But yeah, so this may, like, I don't know. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this still. Now I've talked about the book a lot, but
if you haven't got the book, get the book.
You don't have to get the book.
I'm just saying if you're enjoying it, like we've covered all this, not plasmoids.
No.
But a lot of the stuff that they are referencing in this, it's broken down in the book and it's already explained. Like I just feel like when you're talking about some of this stuff, it's very repetitive because we've already been talked about it for years.
But this is a collection of about 24 scientists and about 6 institutions.
Which makes it awesome.
And NASA with proof. Yeah. The photos, videos, things where they said were not real for 2 decades or 3 decades.
I mean, all the way up until this article, they've been saying it.
Yeah. Or no, nothing's ever looked inside the International Space Station.
Just and the then official like, narrative.
Like, yeah, I guess, you know, there was a jellyfish that looked inside the space station.
But that's just how they control consciousness and your thoughts and what's possible and keeping you within the keeping you reined in, your but thoughts.
I think this still pays towards my original theory that they're going to use this to kill the UFO community.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just some kind of life.
Yeah.
They're just animals. They're just big flying animals. Mm. And not maybe animals in the traditional sense of, you know, the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
But as in animals, as in a beings, living creatures that, you know, are flying around up there.
Yeah.
Even if they're just eating electromagnetic energy or radiation, or maybe they are, that they are like giant jellyfish or filter feeders, like the manta rays we've talked about forever,
mm-hmm.
where their membranous and their propulsion or their gravitational manipulation is plasma-based.
Right.
They've evolved that characteristic.
Which would make sense.
Animals
can do anything.
Yeah. I mean, from electric stargazers to color-changing jellyfish, or not jellyfish, cephalopods.
Yeah, yeah.
Mimicry octopus. I mean, just whales that can, blue whales can talk 1,000 miles.
Man and shrimp, they can see interdimensionally.
11 more colors. They can see, we see 5% of the spectrum, and they see, I think it's 20-something percent. And you just imagine them looking up and being like, yeah, there's giant amoebas flying everywhere. What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Right there.
The red infrared demons flying in mm-hmm. the sky. Yeah.
No, so let us know if you still want us to keep going. We're on page 2 out of 91.
Yeah, we'll keep going. I want to keep going.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
I want to finish it out.
I feel validated.
Exactly. That's why it's this is self-satisfaction just going through it.
Yelling into the ether.
Right, yeah. Old man yells at clouds.
Literally.
Oh, yeah, right. You literally are.
It's one. It's right there.
Maybe I'm the old man.
Shoot it. Shoot it.
Dude it. Dude it.
We'll get Troy Landry to help us hunt one of these things down.
That'd be a good Jeb, draw it.
Troy Lander.
Draw Troy shooting.
He's got to draw.
Or yelling at us.
He's still got
to
draw Buckleberry.
Yeah, Buckleberry. No, wait. No. It's Huckleberry. No, Buckleberry Bill.
Buckleberry Bill.
Buckleberry Bill, yes. The Sons of Appalachia. All fused into one.
All right. I've been the Great and Powerful Mystery.
And I've been J Clone 200.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Guys, thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jade Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye.